Chapter 115. Nag, sir, apostrophe said his wife, is my particular friend, and although Mr. Mantalini leered till his eyes seemed in danger of never coming back to their right places again, Madame Mantalini showed no signs of softening. To do the excellent Miss Nag justice, she had been mainly instrumental in bringing about this altered state of things, for, finding by daily experience, that there was no chance of the business thriving, or even continuing to exist, while Mr. Mantalini had any hand in the expenditure, and having now a considerable interest in its well-doing, she had sedulously applied herself to the investigation of some little matters connected with that gentleman's private character, which she had so well elucidated, and artfully imparted to Madame Mantalini, as to open her eyes more effectually than the closest and most philosophical reasoning could have done in a series of years. To which end, the accidental discovery by Miss Nag of some tender correspondence, in which Madame Mantalini was described as old and ordinary, apostrophe had most providentially contributed. However, notwithstanding her firmness, Madame Mantalini wept very piteously. And as she leant upon Miss Nag, and signed towards the door, that young lady and all the other young ladies with sympathizing faces, proceeded to bear her out. Nickleby, apostrophe said Mr. Mantalini in tears, you have been made a witness to this damnation cruelty, on the part of the demnest enslaver and captivator that never was, oh dem! I forgive that woman. Apostrophe, forgive. Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated Madame Mantalini, angrily. I do forgive her, Nickleby, apostrophe said Mr. Mantalini. You will blame me, the world will blame me, the women will blame me, everybody will laugh, and scoff, and smile, and grin most damnably. They will say, she had a blessing. She did not know it. He was too weak. He was too good. He was a demmit fine fellow, but he loved too strong. He could not bear her to be cross, and call him wicked names. It was a demmed case, there never was a demmeder. But I forgive her. Apostrophe, with this affecting speech Mr. Mantalini fell down again very flat, and lay to all appearance without sense or motion, until all the females had left the room, when he came cautiously into a sitting posture, and confronted Ralph with a very blank face, and the little bottle still in one hand, and the teaspoon in the other. You may put away those fooleries now, and live by your wits again, apostrophe said Ralph, coolly putting on his hat. Demmit, Nickleby, you're not serious? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I seldom joke, apostrophe said Ralph. Good night. Apostrophe, no, but Nickleby, apostrophe said Mantalini. I am wrong, perhaps, apostrophe rejoined Ralph. I hope so. You should know best. Good night. Apostrophe, affecting not to hear his entreaties, that he would stay and advise with him, Ralph left the crestfallen Mr. Mantalini to his meditations, and left the house quietly. Oh ho! Apostrophe, apostrophe, he said, sets the wind, that way so soon? Half knave and half fool, and detected in both characters? I think your day is over, sir. Apostrophe, as he said this, he made some memorandum in his pocketbook in which Mr. Mantalini's name figured conspicuously, and finding by his watch that it was between 9 and 10 o'clock, made all speed home. Are they here? Apostrophe, apostrophe was the first question he asked of Newman. Newman nodded. Been here half an hour. Apostrophe, two of them? One a fat sleek man? Apostrophe, a, apostrophe said Newman. In your room now. Apostrophe, good, apostrophe rejoined Ralph. Get me a coach. Apostrophe, a coach. What, you going to a? Apostrophe stammered Newman. Ralph angrily repeated his orders, and Knox, who might well have been excused for wondering at such an unusual and extraordinary circumstance, for he had never seen Ralph in a coach in his life, departed on his errand, and presently returned with the conveyance. Into it went Mr. Squeers, and Ralph, and the third man, whom Newman Knox had never seen. Newman stood upon the doorstep to see them off, not troubling himself to wonder where or upon what business they were going, until he chanced by mere accident to hear Ralph name the address whither the coachman was to drive. Quick as lightning and in a state of the most extreme wonder, Newman darted into his little office for his hat, and limped after the coach, as if with the intention of getting up behind. But in this design he was balked, for it had too much the start of him, and was soon hopelessly ahead, leaving him gaping in the empty street. "I don't know though," apostrophe said Knox, stopping for breath, "any good that I could have done by going to. He would have seen me if I had. Drive there. What can come of this? If I had only known it yesterday I could have told drive there. There's mischief in it. There must be." Apostrophe, his reflections were interrupted by a gray-haired man of a very remarkable, though far from prepossessing appearance, who, coming stealthily towards him, solicited relief. Newman, still cogitating deeply, turned away. But the man followed him, and pressed him with such a tale of misery, that Newman, who might have been considered a hopeless person to beg from, and who had little enough to give, looked into his hat for some halfpence which he usually kept screwed up, when he had any, in a corner of his pocket handkerchief. While he was busily untwisting the knot with his teeth, the man said something which attracted his attention. Whatever that something was, it led to something else, and in the end he and Newman walked away side by side, the strange man talking earnestly, and Newman listening. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.